Life. I'm welcome everyone with our another program, which I'm conducting, your host Lina Mirmond. I have truly special privilege to introduce a legendary dentist, Dr. Rainey. He is a founder of Texas Institute for Advanced Dental Studies, where he became an innovator of modern, minimally invasive and air abrasive dentistry. I would say that what makes him also a legend is the fact that he truly created a revolutionary science, which he merged with many years of experience, and he reached tremendous success and very unique results, which I truly enthusiastically like to share with you in this program, because all of his accomplishments are powered by passion and dedication. It makes him a very powerful individual. Dr. Rainey, welcome. And I like to start with the fundamental question, having in mind that there is a panoramic view of many other questions. So the first fundamental question is, what is happening at the first day with a new patient who is coming to your office with not much of a knowledge? What will be happening?
Well, Lena, what I would first like to say is I certainly appreciate this opportunity to talk to you about this new approach to dentistry that we call minimally invasive dentistry. And name says it all. It describes what we do, who we are, and our approach to dentistry. Now then, let me answer your question. What happens on the first appointment when the patient comes into the office? We have not seen this patient. The very first thing I tell my staff is to tell the patient not to tell me about anything anybody else has said to them, because I don't want to be I don't want my thought process possibly tainted by any type of outside suggestion. And then one of the very first things that I do when I sit down and I look the patient in the eye and I say, what do you want from me and what do you expect from us and what can we do to help you? And that pretty well sums it up about the patient and dentist relationship. And then I will sit there and listen to the patient and try to get a grasp of what it is that brings that individual into our office.
There is a certain concept and your background which you do share with your patient, and I was frankly personally very much deeply taken by your approach. With your analysis, with your vision. And it's not much of an exaggeration, but the patient can feel that he or she has a totally new, as I previously mentioned, panoramic view of dental approach. Perhaps you can share this with us and go into some specifics.
Okay. Now then, from the very beginning, the most important thing is prevention. That's it. What can we do to stop the progress of dental disease? So our entire focus in the office is going to be, what can we do to maintain, to get the patient to a state of health and to maintain that state? And I always remind my staff and my patients that the very best dentistry is no dentistry. That if you have an option of trying to go forward, we hear all kinds of stuff out there about intercepting root canals, intercepting crowns, and intercepting this, that, and the other. That's completely foreign to our way of thinking. What we're doing is not just looking for things to fix. We're looking at the entire picture of what can we do to stop the progress of disease. And very often, a patient will come to us, and all we have to do is tweak their home care. Because what a lot of people don't understand is that what you did in your 20s that maintained your health then is not going to be adequate for maintaining your health when you hit your 50s. This includes your teeth, your oral condition, and we start off with some very simple steps that recognizing that most dental disease is a bacterial-related disease. There's other factors, you know, there's stress, bruxism, wear of teeth, changing that particular landscape. But the bottom line, the most important thing is the bacterial environment of the mouth. And what can we do to alter the bacterial environment of the mouth so that we have a good resting pH and a good resting non-pathogenic bioflora in the mouth? And is this clear?
It is clear, but certainly I would encourage you to go even deeper and to be a little bit more technical. But before, I just wanted indeed to interject something regarding the patients, because you brought this up, especially the first time this individual comes to your office, and everyone has his or her background, some history. And unfortunately, what happens today, I think it is somewhat automatically assumed that if you come into any professional dentist who is a graduate of some major dental school, will perform and provide responsibly the most progressive type of a treatment with advanced technology, with care, and certainly understanding what is going on. But in reality, actually what happens quite often, more often than it should, that patients end up with tremendously high bill, and just with a long-term medical consequences of very poor treatment. It is quite shocking how it became part of our reality. And what you're saying about the prevention is truly most logical, most natural thing to do. Now, I will ask you a question regarding perhaps different category of patients. If a young child is very lucky and has a parent who is, for example, familiar with your approach, this child has a very bright future. I was amazed with your success in Belize and in Refugio, where you have your practice with the young children. Could you kindly tell us how and what was the result with these young individuals?
Yes, I certainly can, but I'd like to mention one thing, and that is that one of the recent studies run on what is the predicator, what is the indicator of needed dentistry. The most common denominator is a patient going to a new dentist. That new dentist is going to be looking for things to fix. And unfortunately, more often than not, on our second opinions, what we see is a gross over-treatment, proposals for doing all kinds of things that would be better left alone. Now then, going back to this question about what is it that we do for the kids, and you have to understand, you know, from the very beginning, when I was in dental school, the very first time that they showed us take a high-speed drill, stick it into the tooth, and then push it around and do it like this, I went into full-blown rebellion, that I instinctively knew that this was absolutely the wrong thing to do, that why would you go into a tooth and then destroy massive amounts of healthy tooth structure? So when I started into practice, we started then, the only thing we had was a drill, two types, slow speed, high speed. I tended to use the slow speed a lot more than I did the high speed. And we found out very early on that it just wasn't necessary to do these classic outlines of fillings in the teeth. When you look down on the chewing surface of somebody's back teeth and the lower teeth, generally you see this great big black filling right in the middle of the tooth. Well, that has completely destroyed the structural integrity of the tooth. That first filling is going to last on the average of 12, 14 years, maybe. When you replace it, that one's going to last on the average of 8 years, give or take a few years. And then you start getting into the crowns and the root canals, losing teeth, and so forth. So in 1977, I read a very motivating article by a Japanese researcher, Takeo Fujiyama, that was a painless way of operative dentistry. And he was describing the various layers of decay and how if you had decay in your tooth, it was like cutting your fingernails. It shouldn't hurt. And he was going in and carefully dissecting teeth without anesthetic, actually using the lack of anesthetic as part of his guideline. If the tooth started getting sensitive, he knew he was getting too deep. Okay. Now the problem with that was, of course, he was a state employee. He was a professor. He was working in a university. And if he wanted to take all day to do one lower tooth, then he could do that. Here I am in private practice. I have people to pay. I've got to turn on the lights. We've got air conditioning. And all the other overhead that goes on with running private practice. So in 1978, I started dissecting teeth so I could understand what a tooth looked like. And we dissected literally hundreds of teeth until I began to realize that nobody had described what a tooth looked like correctly. Now, this was, now we're talking about the 1970s. Okay, and then I started looking at ways to identify first unsound tooth structure, and then ways to remove that unsound tooth structure without damaging the healthy tooth around it. And then by 1983, we had worked out all of the basics. I understand this was from 1978 to 1983. Something that now takes me around 15 to 20 minutes to explain and demonstrate to the average bright practitioner out there. And by 1983, we were doing some pretty primitive work compared to what we do today. And, you know, it wasn't hurting the patient. The fillings looked pretty good when we started seeing them on recall. And one thing led to the other. We stumbled into the air abrasion. I'd known about it since the 1970s and happened to have people in the area who had used the old air abrasion in the 1950s, the early 1953 units. And I knew that that was the way to go. So we started working in that particular area. And then by 1990, we had worked out the details. We had published the preliminary findings in 1986. It's not a misspeak. 1986, we had understood what it was going to take to do a permanent sealant on a tooth. And we call that super sealant. How permanent? In 1990, I was sitting and talking to my assistant, you know, just like you do in the usual course of a business day, and we're working on a child. And I said, Dana, why don't we just put a permanent warranty on these sealants? And there was a long silence on the other side of the chair, and then the question, Dr. Rainey, when you go back and repair some of your early work, have you ever charged for that ever? And I said, well, I hadn't thought about it, but no. And she said, you already have a professional lifetime warranty on these sealants. Okay, so let's make it permanent. Let's make it public. And then I published it in the newspaper. Okay, now we're talking about 1990. And now then, let's talk about 2000. That's 10 years after that. Let's talk about 2010. Now we're talking 20 years. Let's talk about 2013, and we're talking about 30 years since we worked out a method that will permanently stop 80% of all decay in the permanent teeth. That's all future dentistry. Period. Okay. Now then, knowing something and proving it are two different things. And there are certain things that you need to go through. And despite all of the begging, pleading, cajoling, asking, grant writing, et cetera, and so on and so forth, the universities have completely shun this technology. And not just a university, I'm talking about academia as a whole. So here we are 30 years later with the answer to how to stop 80% of all future dentistry. And if you go to the American Dental Association meeting or the Academy of General Dentistry meeting, what are the top things on the list there? How to do crowns, how to sell patients, how to do practice management, treatment plans, all of this based on technology that was developed and perfected in the 1960s. How often do you see a lecture in the public domain through the American Dental Association, through the major representations of representatives of dentistry? How often do you see how to prevent future decay, how to keep teeth alive, how to keep from having to do root canals, how to keep from having to do crowns? It doesn't exist. It's not there.
I truly even more shocked now to hear what you're saying. I'm saying more because when I got just acquainted with your approach, I firstly felt that this is a fairy tale, that this is only for people who have basically healthy teeth, that this is for people who just need to maintain their teeth and go for cleaning maybe two or three times a year. But then when I got deeper in understanding of your research, even without having a medical degree, it is so profoundly logical. It is so profoundly caring for human tissue. I also like to say that it's not only because you give a hope and not only because you made that tremendous transition and transformation from the regular dentistry, but it is also connects to modern world of a vision of human body on a micro level. And your lifetime warranty, which you providing for the teeth, leads to much deeper issue. It's, in a sense, lifetime warranty for health, because it's not a secret. Everything starts from mouth. So we started a little bit to talk about children, but I'm so grateful that you took us through the history of your development, your accomplishments. And frankly, I like to postpone a little bit the resistance and serious obstacles which you are facing from ADA and some other issues. But I like to concentrate further on the treatment and on your truly microscopical approach towards certain patients. So I like to ask you certain specific questions. Let's talk about the implants. When patient comes to the dead end, came to you too late, and firstly, you will suggest certain a therapy. Some of those therapies, as you already mentioned, are very simple, but one has to be extremely scrupulously disciplined and diligent, and then we'll get to the point when gums are healing and where, let's say, bone loss became much slower. How would you approach this patient, and what is your view of implants?
Okay. Let me give you a little bit more background. We're an old Texas family. My ancestors actually fought in the Texas Revolution. And, you know, people keep asking, what are you doing here in Refugio? Well, I was born and raised here, you know. And that doesn't have a whole lot to do, particularly this day and age, with somebody's education or their exposure. And what we have had here is an extremely fortunate incident where I am here in Refugio. I see patients. We saw the first bridge I did when I started practice 42 years ago. We saw it last week. Okay. One of the very first patients I placed the minimally invasive preventative sealants in was my hygienist, and she was around 6 years of age. She has the first ones we did. So we get to look at this stuff over and over and over again, year after year, decade after decade. So we have a very good feel for what works and what fails. Now then, going back to your question about implants, when I lose a tooth, particularly if it's a patient who has been in this practice all of these years, I take it personally. You can ask my wife. I lose sleep at night. You'll ask my employees. I'll go to them. What did we do wrong? What could we have done differently? Why did this patient lose his tooth? Because it is a very rare occasion in our practice where we lose a tooth. Okay? Now then, just slamming an implant back into the place where that tooth came from is not necessarily an answer, because that implant carries with it all of the potential reasons for failure as the natural tooth. That if you don't control the bacteria in the mouth, you don't control the sepsis of placing that implant into the bone under very sterile conditions. There's a number of reasons why an implant should not work and will not work and is going to fail. So how do I feel about implants? The best thing is prevention to begin with. Do what you can to that you don't need to place that implant. Now then, once again, implants are like other things in dentistry, that somebody who has an exquisite skill has a real gift of taking what's in their mind and putting it down between the tips of their fingers, is going to have a much higher rate of success, be it implants in dentistry, be it cardiovascular surgery, be it neurosurgery, brain surgery, et cetera. And that's just a fact. And just because somebody goes to a course and they've seen all the literature on implants and they have all the current equipment and so forth, doesn't guarantee the patient that that individual is going to be able to place that implant and do it reliably. We are down in the middle of the coastal bend of Texas. We're about 170 miles from Houston. And one of my favorite people to do implants, when we get to that point, and I tell the patient, you have a choice. We can either do a bridge here or we can do an implant. If you're going to have an implant done, then I want you to go to Jimmy Clark in the Woodlands, right outside of Houston, Texas, because he was one of the very first, and he has an extremely long and proven track record on implants. So how do I feel about implants? On the average, I don't see 50% of the implants being done well. And there are individuals out there who do a very good job on the implants. How we're going to go out and identify and find those individuals, I don't have any idea. I can find those individuals within my sphere of influence. They are costly, time-consuming, take a lot of specialized equipment. And I know that if I had any interest whatsoever in doing any type of surgery, that we could probably meet the criteria of doing a good implant. However, I choose not to do implants the same way that we quit doing complex molar removal years ago. We find people who make that a major part of their life, and then we turn that over to them, and then we can rely on their expertise to deliver an exceptional product. So what your question is, how does the individual patient find a person like that? And unfortunately, I can't answer that question at this particular time.
But you actually answered, in a sense, the most fundamental first question, how to go about this using your own self-judgment, using knowledge and evaluation of the dentist and a doctor like yourself. There is a very unfortunate reality today, and it's not something which just exists for a year or two. It became a mass production approach and products where implant became almost as if you go and buy some kind of a new arm or leg. You in the hands of statistics. You are in the hands of this huge costs. And yes, as you said absolutely correctly, unfortunately, there are failures. And very rarely you can find some close to physiological explanation like you shared with us now, where you can really orient yourself and find yourself with this alternative, if it is indeed the only way to go. So your deeply responsible approach to this opens everybody's mind that number one, the prevention need to be taken to the absolutely fullest expression of it, that health, what you have, is the baseline. And if it does come to this last critical resort as a installation of the implant, then I think you already gave a name of a person. But also it is a search. It's not overnight a decision. I'd like to tell our listeners that we have this extremely special, sharply relevant program with Dr. J. Tim Rainey, who is all the way from Texas, found, established, and performing a revolutionary approach in preservation of your mouth health and innovative technique, which we called MID, which is minimally invasive dentistry. Dr. Rainey, I think before next question, could you kindly tell us where everyone can find you with some wonderful websites you have, very informative, very inviting, and again, where your practice is in Texas?
Okay. I am J. Tim Rainey, the letter J, the name Tim, the name Rainey, R-A-I-N-E-Y. And you can find me on www.jtimrainey.com. And if you'll just Google the name J. Tim Rainey, you'll find many, many hits, and it'll eventually lead you directly back to that website. Now then, and back into, we're talking about implants, reconstructive dentistry, and other things that are on the far end of the spectrum of what do you do after the patient has been mutilated beyond any logical comprehension by starting out with a high-speed drill and then blasting that to smithereens, okay? So the best dentistry is no dentistry. The best dentistry is prevention. And then that's what where my 15 minutes of expertise of influence will be. And what we have done is we have developed a virtually foolproof method of stopping chewing surface decay in the permanent teeth. And then, once again, getting back to the first of the program, how reliable is it? It's reliable enough where I have put a professional permanent lifetime warranty on the restorations, on the chewing surface of the back teeth that have erupted under our care. Now then, one of the problems with anything new out there, and one of the things that we failed to do, was we failed to protect or copyright minimally invasive dentistry. And last time I Googled minimally invasive dentistry, I got over 250,000 hits. Virtually none of the first 200 or 300 had nothing to do with being minimally invasive. They were having minimally invasive dentures, implants, on and on and on and on. It's kind of like you have a 4 or 5 year old in the family, and you drop your guard and you utter a cuss word when you hit your thumb with a hammer, and that 5 year old picks up that cuss word, and they have no idea what it means, but it sure feels good to say it, you know, and so they wander around for the next 2 weeks muttering this vile word. Well, minimally invasive dentistry is just that we failed to protect it, so anybody and everybody can claim to be doing minimally invasive dentistry. What we did recently was go one step further, and then what we did was copyright and trademark minimally invasive preventative dentistry. Now then, how can a person tell if somebody is doing that for their their children. I want to take my child to this dentist over there. And he says that he's doing minimally invasive dentistry. Okay. Then the question is, where is your permanent lifetime warranty on these kids that you're treating? How long have you had it in place? And how long do you intend to stay in practice? How, and whenever we start, it doesn't matter. Over the years, I've had people come up and say, oh, well, Dr. Rainey, I can do the same thing with a high-speed drill. Oh, you can. Okay. Man, I'm sure glad to hear that. You use that high-speed drill on your patients. What do you do? Well, I put in standard resin sealants in those teeth, and they work. I said, fine. Now then, and this is an actual conversation I've had several times. Now then, let me know where you live, and what I want to do is I want to see you take out a full-page ad in your local newspaper informing your patients of record or past record that you put a permanent lifetime warranty on those restorations in the chewing surface of the teeth. And, well, it's, then they reach for a Twix and start stuttering and wander off in the twilight, you know, because they can't do it. There is the proof right there that the person is doing a reliable procedure, okay? So how do patients get this? We have trained over 2,000 hardcore dentists in the United States in the air abrasion and how to do to permanently stop the decay process in the chewing surface of the teeth. Now then, finding the dentists who are staying on the straight and narrow, people who haven't strayed off the path, who haven't put up their air abrasion machines, and number one, you cannot do this with anything other than air abrasion. If somebody says, oh, I can do the same thing with a laser. Oh, I can do the same thing with high-speed drill. Oh, I can do the same thing with slow-speed drill. Those are totally different forms of energy. They're not selective. They will not remove only unsound tooth structure. They're going to remove anything that they hit, and that's why you don't see anybody else putting a permanent lifetime warranty on it. Now then, with our success that we've had in Belize, treating these kids, and we've been back there after treating a whole slew of them. A year ago, we saw the follow-ups. This year, we saw a little over 100 kids on follow-up. What we're seeing is that the teeth that we treated need very little touch-up. And what also is happening, because we're removing the source of the decay, which is the cavities in the teeth that have already come in, then we don't see decay forming in the new teeth that are erupting. We don't see rapid decay forming. So there's very little that we have to do with these teeth other than go back in and touch them up. So here's the other question. If we can provide this service, and I actually have a picture of my hygienist and my dental assistant working in tandem off the back end of a banana plantation loading dock in a third world country, providing this particular service. If they can do it under those conditions, why is it that Americans can't find the same level of care for their own children in this country?
I'm only interrupting Dr. Rainey because whoever hears you have probably most soulful reaction. It is beyond mind-boggling what you just said. And I wanted to congratulate you with making such a tremendous discovery implementing this, to have courage to follow through and create a true base for such phenomenal dentistry. I like to take this opportunity of your thought and make a bridge to the school, to the education. You are, incidentally, you are associate professor at the University of Texas in the Health Science Center School of Dentistry in San Antonio. I'd like for you to comment on the process and basis of education of young dentists. What is going on in school? How they are getting their knowledge? And what is the future for those dentists?
Okay. The future is very, very bleak, because all of the systems that were worked out for teaching dentists were worked out in relationship to the massive epidemic of decay that we were seeing in the late 50s, early 60s, and into the 70s, because the manufacturers were putting sugar in toothpaste and their partners in crime, the universities, were promoting toothpaste, which in turn created the massive epidemic, which built the pattern, the model for modern dental teaching today. And they haven't gotten rid of that, and they haven't addressed that. Now then, how bad is it? Okay, in the late 80s, I went into one of the local hygiene schools and then taught everybody how to do effective sealants. As soon as I left, everything was discarded, okay? We went into my alumnus, the University of Texas dental branch at Houston. We brought the equipment over there. We showed, we did little courses. I had a scheduled meeting with the dean and so on and so forth. And there was the professor of my department there at Berry. Taught a course on what we would call minimally invasive dentistry today, is air abrasion dentistry back then. Okay. And then in the year 2000, since my son was going to be part of the University of Texas Health Science Center dental graduating class in the 2000s at San Antonio, then switched universities, and then a friend of mine helped develop this technology, Bill Miller out of San Antonio, and I provided courses, took all the information there. There are thousands and thousands of hours that we as a group have spent in developing the PowerPoints. We have research, we have peer-reviewed literature, we have everything it takes to back us up. So one of the things that is required in Texas for assistance to give sealants, to provide sealants to patients, is they must go through a certification course. So when we added our newest assistant, Nancy, I found the course at my old alumnus there at UT Houston, sent my hygienist, both my hygienists, who are actually retro certified, along with Nancy, to take the course. Okay. Now then, how much of the information do you think was being used at UT San Antonio and UT Houston that I had left as my legacy?
Well, it's something.
Let me answer that. Absolutely none.
I was.
Not one bit.
Puzzled, and I was somewhat on the right track, but I didn't want to insult the university too much.
Right.
And
there are no sacred cows in my life. There are none. And I understand that. But the bottom line, what is the future for
somewhat, you paved the way a little bit to my comments, and I will stress that I'm making them I do not want to put you in some kind of a spot. You made your place in the world unshakable, and you certainly have your own power, and it's so clear, it's totally unbeatable. So I will take a route to ask this rhetoric question about ADA. I'm just wondering how many years, how much politics and money it will take for ADA to have some kind of acknowledgement, some kind of a humanity to understand that every human life deserves to have some minimum providing to him or to her health advice and treatment. And this individual who indeed, as I mentioned before, comes with a full trust and a full confidence to the doctor who comes from a respectable school will just feel that that's the only way to go. I hope that we will be able to continue our discussion, and only because of the time, I wanted to ask you a last question regarding indeed this inevitable transition, inevitable change and transformation in your practice, and not to make it simple and not to make it too limited, I should say. But how would you feel if someone will ask you, what is the most important immediately two or three issues and changes which every dentist need and must to face with?
Okay, number one, the answer to that question is dentists need to know what a tooth looks like, okay? I give a lecture, what teeth look like. And there is probably not one dentist in 1,000 who actually understands how a tooth is put together, how it's constructed, yet they want to work on this this tooth based on knowledge. Now, this is not a misspeak either. The drawn from knowledge that is being taken from drawings from the 17th century and has been handed down all of these centuries, that this is a fissure in a tooth, this is what a tooth looks like, this is how decay starts. It's wrong. And the universities will not change that until they're forced to change. The most important thing that a dentist can do is to go out and understand what a tooth looks like. It's I don't know how to even compare that. It's like being a brain surgeon without ever having taken a course in brain anatomy. Dentists don't know it. Now then, that was part of the thing that I left with the University of Texas Health Science Center, was what teeth look like. And I defined the structures of the teeth, how the stress is distributed, the various layers of the teeth, how decay occurs, et cetera, and so forth. You can't find one vestige of that in any being taught in any university anywhere, okay? So dentists need to go out, they need to learn what teeth look like, and they need to learn what they can do to stop the decay process from the very beginning. Now then, we used to do these courses here in Refugio all the time through the 90s, and then I started, I essentially backed off. I haven't been much in the spotlight or in dentistry because I've been working on other projects, building a very reliable small neuroabrasion machine that's very portable, the ones that we used in the Dominican Republic, Baja California, and Belize, and the one that I've used here in my office almost exclusively for the last 7 years. So how can a dentist learn how to do this? Pretty simple. We give these courses down in Belize. The dentist will go down there within 3 to 4 hours. He's going to be proficient enough to turn them loose. And I'm not just talking about a dentist. I'm talking about dentists, dental hygienists, any expanded duty assistant. We can get them in about 4 hours, in about the morning before the noon break. We can get them proficient enough where we can turn them loose with a minimal amount of supervision. One of the pictures we use on the website, and when we're talking about our Belize mission, is I'm sitting working with Kathy, my hygienist. And then the question is, what's wrong with this picture? And people will look, and then somebody really starts thinking, they'll notice that I'm sitting on the left side of the chair. That's because I'm assisting her. I am mentoring her. I am showing her. I'm teaching her what she needs to know. I'm conveying my knowledge. So how do you do this in a classroom setting? You know, go down to the Holiday Inn and listen to somebody pontificate about how they provide this service, and then bring out some Typhonauts, some hog jaws or plaster models and say, okay, now do this. No, we've tried that. It only works about a third of the time where the dentist can actually go back and implement what it is that he's seen. If we take these people, bring them down to Belize, Baja California, under Matt Meninsko or Eric Zarensky, two of our lieutenants out of California, and Charles Rufinos will be back with us here within the next year or so. Those are three guys right there in California who do a great job. And there's another office there. It's Bill Dome's office with Nathan Feaster in there. They do a great job of early intervention, early diagnosis. And they can teach people how to do this. They can take them down and then provide them with hands-on courses. But the best thing that a person can do right now is contact me through my website, sign up, let's take them down to Belize, let's immerse them in this. They're going to do those people more good. Think about it. They're going to provide these people with something they can't get, period. They're going to provide a preventative procedure on the chewing surface of these teeth so that we don't have those teeth breaking down in by the time they're 20, and then we don't have the front teeth breaking down by the time they're 30. There are whole segments of that population down there that are toothless by the time they're 40 years of age. It's because we don't stop the procedure as it starts. Okay? So that's where my expertise is. I do have the answers on how to teach people, how to train them. Everything has just now fallen into place, and I'd say just now, I'm talking about the last 6 weeks or so, where we can start running these trips. We can go anywhere in the world. We know how to set these things up, and we can teach. We don't care where it is. Find us a person who wants to deliver this to their area of influence, Guatemala, Peru, India. We have a mission that will be going down to India here fairly soon. We'll be spreading the word there. And we're more than willing to bring in local dentists and teach mm-hmm. them how to do this.
Dr. Rainey, I have very, very difficult time to interrupt you. I hope it's just an interruption. I hope that your totally so diversified schedule will permit to meet with us all again. And this is just the beginning, even though it was a such overwhelming panoramic of ideas, of history, of the reality, of certain things to think about, to act on, and to take so much into our minds and hearts. I certainly will leave it up to you if you would like to come back on the air with our program and continue on what we just started. Certainly, Belize is one of the points, and there are so many like that. But for now, I have to conclude and to thank you profoundly, personally. Also, thank you for what you've done so much for so many people, for the fact that you young, energetic, and so much for you to look forward. And I personally give you my commitment, and whoever is working with you and for you, just do the same thing. So I wish you absolutely the most of the satisfaction, and I would say until soon.
Okay, and I thank you for this opportunity. Once again, if anybody wants to communicate with me, they can find me on my website. I would suggest that they send questions in, and then Ms. Lena and I can organize these and answer your questions directly, whatever it is that the audience has to ask. And I certainly do appreciate this opportunity to share this odyssey with you. Thank you very much.
Very, very mutual. That was, I would say, extraordinarily memorable program, historic program. It certainly made impact on all of us, on the professionals, on us regular citizens, on people with severe problems, and the people who felt hopeless but now can feel some hope. That was Lena Miermont with Lena Life, having program with a legendary dentist, J. Tim Rainey. Until soon, with my warmest thanks to BBS, who again was by our side and made this program possible. I also extend my personal thanks to my engineer, Julian Lampert, who you already know as a wonderful musician. And until next time, actually next Tuesday, we're going to have extraordinarily important guest as well. Mark Barandes is coming back. Until then,